You're listening to JS Party, a weekly celebration of JavaScript and the web. This special rendition of the JS Party theme song is called Changelog and Knuckles, JS Party Zone, and it's coming soon to streaming platforms near you. Yes, we are releasing full-length albums of Changelog beats for your listening enjoyment. Pretty cool, right? A quick thank you to our partners for helping us bring you world-class developer pods each and every week. Fastly.com, Fly.io, and TypeSense.org. Okay, it's party time, y'all. Well, I'm here with Jared Sumner from The Bun Project. Hey, man, appreciate you coming on the show.
Thanks for having me.
Exciting times, right? I mean, you first tweeted about Bun, it looks like May 2021. This was like early days teaser. There was a lot of interest then. And then if my research serves me well, you first announced like Bun 0.1, July 5th of 22. That generated a bunch of excitement. And since then, you've been busy readying the project for production, you've raised money, you've started a business, and you launched the 1.0 back on September 8th to even more interest and fanfare and tweets and posts and videos. Lots going on. Tons of interest, tons of success getting people to try it out. Adoption has been pretty impressive so far. Were you surprised at all by the success of either of these launches?
I mean, I was surprised by both of them. I mean, I expected people to give it a try, and like some people to give it a try and to be excited. But I think one of the hard things is that it's a lot easier to try an NPM package than it is to try like a JavaScript runtime.
Yes.
And like we technically do distribute on NPM, but most of the people installing Bun are not installing on NPM. They're using the curl install script. And so I sort of, and it's also like not directly integrated into like it's, people don't typically install a runtime. So it's kind of like, so I guess, yeah, like definitely a lot more people have been trying it than I expected.
What do you think attributes to the interest? I mean, obviously performance was like the thing that you came out of the gate with, and it's just so stinking fast. Like when you first try it, is that what most people say? Like why they're interested in Bun or why they actually went out of the way to install a new runtime and try it? It was just like, I got to try this thing.
It's people try Bun because of the performance is what gets people to try Bun. But the thing that gets people excited to continue to use Bun is not actually performance. It's the all-in-one. It's that you don't have to worry about the difference between ESM import and like require. It's that TypeScript just works. It's that JSX just works. It's that like the build step is there, but it's kind of invisible as it should be.
What problem were you trying to solve, or why are you the guy that did this? Like what, tell me your mind space when you started working on this. Like what were you trying to solve and what made you attack this kind of problem?
I'd been frustrated for years just how slow everything in JavaScript is. That like, why does it take so long to install dependencies? Why is it so hard to like just run a JSX file or a TypeScript file? Why does it actually matter that like you're using import or require and you have to worry about which one is the one for this file? Why is MJS or CJS, why is that a thing that shouldn't exist? Like, sure, there's like reasons for all of these things, but like we also could just not. It could also just be simpler.
We also could just not. So you said, well, someone's got to make a thing where you just don't do that. And I guess it's going to be me. Or did you look around the room and say, is anybody going to tackle this? I mean, what made you do it?
Basically, what really happened was I was building this stupid like voxel game in the browser, and like the cycle time just got really slow as the game got bigger, and I was just really frustrated with how long it took to refresh, to like see my changes after I refreshed the page. And so the first thing I tried was like, all right, what if, and there's probably some tweet about this at some point, but, and this was like a game with like an XJS shell as like React app for like the UI, and I was like, all right, what if we just got like ES Build to work with Next? And so I had like this really hacky Go-based thing that like tried to get ES Build to work. And I was like, huh, that is kind of faster, but not exactly in the ways I expected. Like it was faster at build time, but it wasn't faster at the incremental. So then what I tried, I was like, all right, well, what if I just ported ES Build to Zig, like just the transpiler. And so that was the first thing. And it spent like a few weeks and I had like something that sort of worked, not super well, but it like sometimes could successfully produce JavaScript.
There you go.
And then I was like, wow, that's actually three times faster than ES Build.
Okay.
And then I was like, all right, I should just like keep seeing where this goes.
Keep pulling the thread.
Exactly. So then a little bit later, I added a dev server, which we actually removed in 1.0. But I added a dev server. And then for that dev server, I wanted to get Next.js to work. So then I was like, all right, well, we're going to need a JavaScript runtime to do like the server-side rendering parts. And then I was like, okay, well, what JavaScript runtime should we use? And I looked at like QuickJS. QuickJS is really easy to embed, but it has no JIT, so it's kind of slow. And then I looked at using V8, but V8 kind of has this fixed startup time cost that I wasn't excited about. Like V8 is great, but, and then I tried JavaScript Core, and JavaScript Core was like this really good balance of fast startup time, but with like a very, very good JIT.
So you kind of answered a couple of my big questions right up front, which is kind of like why Zig and why JavaScript Core. Let's go back to Zig for a moment. I mean, ES Build is in Go, right?
Yeah.
And Go is, okay, it's garbage collected, but it's not exactly known for being slow. But what, I mean, how did you know about Zig? This is a very obscure thing. I think you're making Zig popular with Bun. Like, what did you know about Zig? And of course, why not Rust or something else? What made the Zig choice? And why did you think, well, if ES Build wasn't in Go, it would be faster?
Well, so at the time, another thing I was thinking about, which we ended up not doing, but what I was thinking about was like, well, what if you could just do all your builds in the browser as like inside a Surface Worker? And Go is actually like not a great language for WebAssembly right now. Specifically, they have, I think that the WASM GC stuff will probably make it better. But Zig is a fantastic language for WebAssembly because it has really good dead code elimination. The way it works is a big feature of Zig is comp time. And it's this idea that almost all of the code can be, code which is like top level is executed at compile time. And you can have like explicit comp time scopes, which then embed the result into the final binary. And that's also how the type system works. So it's a statically typed language, but in a lot of times it's really like duck typed because the duck typing happens at compile time. And so this extends to dead code elimination because code which is not reachable is not run, and which means it's also not included in the final output. So if you want really, really small binaries in WebAssembly, Zig is a fantastic language for that. But this is kind of a tangent because like it turns out we didn't use WebAssembly, but
right.
Zig is actually a great choice anyway.
So you kind of chose it because of the WASM stuff, but then you decided not to do that anyways.
Yeah, and but the other part of it too was that I tried Rust for a bit and I just wasn't very productive. There's a lot of stuff that makes it kind of hard to be productive for some people in Rust, and Zig is just extremely productive. The language doesn't have a lot of syntax, so there's not actually a lot to learn. The hard parts are all about manual memory management and thinking about like you have to think like a really big difference from like JavaScript, for example, is you have to spend a lot of time thinking about when am I going to free this, how do I free this, how do I make sure I only free it once. And Zig has a bunch of tools to help make this easier, but it's still something you have to worry about. And that's also part of why Zig is, as a language is really good for writing fast software, because it doesn't do hidden memory allocations. It doesn't have constructors or destructors. So that means that like every function you run is really that you can see what the code is doing. It's usually kind of hard to know everything going on.
That's interesting. So one thing about Node in terms of community, like a barrier to contributing to Node, especially for web devs, has been C++. Obviously, there's people that know C++, and there's lots of contributors to Node over the years. One thing I hear people talking about with Bun and community is like, well, Zig is even more obscure. You know, C++, not the easiest programming language to use. It's doable. Many people do it, but probably orders of magnitude more people are familiar with and comfortable with that than they are with Zig. Is this a concern of yours? Like as you grow Bun and you want more people to contribute, are you not concerned because you're going to keep the core close to your chest? Or what are your thoughts on like Zig being a barrier for folks helping build and evolve Bun?
I would say for Zig tends to be quite a bit easier for people than like C++ for people who aren't already familiar with C++, because Zig is just a much simpler language. Like in C++, you have like templates and
there's lots there.
Yeah. And like, there's like a lot of different ways to do the same thing. Like you can do, you can have like, or is like two brackets, or you can have the word or, like both of those work and are valid and are the same.
Bug or feature. Certainly a feature. Somebody wanted both versions at some point, but why?
Yeah. In Zig, there's really just one way to do things. But Zig also has a lot of really nice features that are inspired from Go. Like for example, Zig has slices and like, you can do the same kind of like, range for like indexing, and it has like defer is also a keyword in Zig, though in Zig it means a different thing than Go. In Go's defer is at the end of the function scope. In Zig, defer is the end of the current scope. So it's really useful for like you have like a loop and you want to make sure you run something at the end of the loop, like you want a free memory or something at the end of the loop, then you can use defer to do that. And Zig is also just evolving a lot. Like there's a very good developer velocity on the language itself. Like they just added a small version of destructuring for arrays like in the last like 2 weeks.
So Zig has some Go inspiration. Go is not an old language. I think it's probably like 12 now. I remember its 10th anniversary. Is Zig like really new? I mean, I know lots of things. I've been around the industry, but like for me, this is a relatively new, like, and a lot of people are like, Zig, what's Zig? And these are people that have been in the community a while. So relatively young as a language.
Yeah. I think it's 2016 was when it was. I'm not 100% sure though, but it's pretty new. Yeah. They have there's the Zig Software Foundation. They have a handful of people working on Zig full time.
And you found people picking up Zig in order to help you out with Bun or to work on it either at your company or outside of it?
Yeah. Because Zig doesn't actually have like really complicated syntax and like the amount of stuff to learn is not actually huge. People who are familiar with C or C++ usually can be productive in Zig really quickly.
That's excellent. That's one thing I do know about Go is that it's incredibly simple in terms of, I think there's like less than 30 keywords in the entire language. So in terms of just like surface area of things that you have to learn, particularly one of the simpler languages to learn. So I think if Zig takes that inspiration, they'll be ahead of many other languages. So a lot goes into a 1.0. You've been working very hard for a couple of years on this. What do you consider when you're thinking, okay, we're going to launch a 1.0, which just happened this month. What all had to be there? You're like, we have to have these features that just have to be there for 1.0. What all goes into that in your eyes?
The main thing we really wanted to make sure was that existing frameworks work in Bun. So that's like Next.js, specifically like at least like the pages router, that's like Astro, that's Vite in general, and a bunch more. And that's these are also kind of a stress test of Node.js compatibility, because the build tools are the things that use the most features of Node. Those are the hardest things to get working, and a lot of them work. And so really the decision to say it is Bun 1.0 is this time, it was really two things. One is that you kind of just need to pick a time to just say a number, or like it's going to be done by this, because sort of the act of deciding that is what makes it real. And it's sort of this shared goal to drive towards. That's part of it. But the real thing is that like we just made a lot of progress on Node.js compatibility.
So with much acclaim and much excitement and interest also comes criticism. I'm sure you've heard some of the criticism.
I was expecting more, to be honest.
Were you?
Yeah.
Oh, what were you expecting to get criticized that wasn't? Or what were you expecting it to come from?
I was like, just people were like, usually if something has a lot of attention, then there's also, it incentivizes criticism a lot more. And there've been like maybe two, like a blog post and a YouTube video is roughly the extent of most criticism I've seen. And I was expecting just like, I'm also just like, in general, I kind of try to be pessimistic about things going well.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Expect the worst and
exactly
be surprised if it's better than that. So it surprised you on the positive side. I have seen criticism about the 1.0 specifically. They say it's unwarranted because there's no Windows support. Is that something that speaks to you?
Yeah. Basically, we have a Windows build, but it is just really buggy, like barely usable. And we're going to spend a lot more time on Windows soon. But right now, we also have 1,700 issues, which is a lot.
Get your hands full.
That's the hard thing is that like, okay, people are definitely excited. People are trying Bun and we can see that by all the issues. We really need to fix stuff.
So Windows support is a thing that you're working on, but it's not necessarily at the top of the priorities list because you have so many bugs that you're drilling down. Is that what you're saying? And would it be like official, like Windows System 32, or I'm sure it's not even 32 anymore, but, or it'd be like WSL style, like a lot of people.
You can totally use Bun. A lot of people are using Bun via using WSL2,
okay,
Windows Subsystem for Linux. It's very usable. It works very well in Windows Subsystem for Linux too. The main caveat right now is that if you're using /mount/C, then Bun is just slower in a bunch of places. This is kind of inherent to the mount drive because it uses a network file system, so it's going to be slower in literally everything. But it is especially true in Bun because it's just not something we've spent time optimizing yet.
Gotcha. So the other major goal is this Node compatibility, as close as you can get to the surface area of Node. Just how compatible is Bun with Node? You mentioned a lot of the major front-end frameworks are working, but I'm sure there's gaps. If you had to give a percentage of like, well, it's 60% compatible, like how close do you think it is to being a drop-in replacement? Because that's kind of your guys' goal, right? Drop-in replacement?
Yeah, we want to be a drop-in replacement for Node. In a lot of cases, we are. The cases where we're not are like, we haven't implemented DGRAM and we haven't implemented HTTP2. We do have a branch for HTTP2. I'm expecting that to be us to ship that in the next 2 weeks. DGRAM is a little bit further away. I think the majority use case for DGRAM is like Discord voice chat and voice related things. And HTTP2 is used by the V3 of AWS SDK in a bunch of cases. So it's like really, really important for us to get that shipped. The SDK V2 does work. It's just the V3 expects HTTP2 support. But most of the node modules, most of like the node built-ins are implemented. We have some gaps in like node crypto, some gaps in zlib, like we're missing Brotli. But like we'll get these done. It's not a huge, it's mostly just an amount of work. None of these are actually that hard.
Well, friends, I'm here with Eldad Fuchs, founder and CEO of AppRite. Build fast, scale big, all in one place. Eldad, what's the backstory on your platform?
The main thing is basically I started AppRite for myself. It started as a side project about 3 years ago when I was trying to solve my own challenges as an engineer. I'm coming with a background. I've been writing code for something like 20 years. And I've been building a lot of solo projects and I've been leading teams as a team lead, as a CTO. And I always felt like things are way more complex than what they should be. At some point, I also discovered that my true passion is not really just writing code. It's actually seeing stuff coming to life. And code was just a mean to an end. And the end was to build product. And AppRite's goal was to basically try and abstract all of this complexity, all of this knowledge that you needed to possess as a developer about security, building different APIs. You know, for me, it took, in one of my previous company, it took us like 6 months to build an authentication API for a massive platform with over 1 million users. And that's something that, you know, honestly, I don't ever want to do again. Not just because it was so complex, like who wants to build the same thing twice? So AppRite was this like platform that I imagined that like I can just build it once and let everyone build on top of it and build my own side projects on top of it, build my own startup on top of it. Which actually, my previous startup was built completely on top of AppRite. Yeah, and today we have major services, major products that are just all inside the same platform. Like if you need authentication, AppRite has it. If you need storage management, like manage your files and manage your image transformation, AppRite has it covered. If you need a database to like store and make sure that you can handle all the persistency needs of your app, you got it. You need serverless functions, you got it. And we're planning a lot of more surprises down the road and add a lot more capabilities to this. What we envision is like the cloud that was designed, that is designed for developers.
Okay, the cloud that was built for developers, AppRite.io. Check them out. Build fast, scale big, all in one place. AppRite is a backend platform for developing web, mobile, and Flutter applications. Get started at AppRite.io. Again, AppRite.io. And tell them JS Party sent you.
You've been incredibly productive. I mean, I've been watching from the sidelines. Obviously, when 1.0 came out, like the amount of things that are in Bun, that Bun does, like you said, it's not just a runtime. It's all these things. It's kind of a batteries included thing. How do you stay so productive as a team or as an individual? You have all this work ahead of you. How do you get so much done so quickly?
One thing is as a company, we have one meeting a week. So it's also like very clear what we need to prioritize because we have, as I said many times, we have 1,700 open issues.
Probably more than that now since you haven't checked in a few minutes.
Probably.
1,701 at least, right?
So, but I would say like, it's also like one of the things about Bun too is that because one of the upsides to being an all-in-one toolkit is that we reuse a lot of the same code. So like the JSON parser is the same as used for the bundler, but it's also used in Bun install to like read the package JSON files. The tsconfig.json parser can be reused for like in general for supporting like JSON with comments and things like that. We need to expose that. We haven't actually exposed that yet. We're going to find some way to expose that. That's tricky because this is a tangent, but that's tricky because we don't want to support. It would be not great if we made it so arbitrary files can have trailing commas with JSON, because then you can, it's like, but it's a nice feature. Maybe we do like JSON C or something, or JSON 5 maybe. But It should have some file extension, some way to demark that, like, this is expected to have commas.
Commas and comments, right? You put those two things together and you're all suddenly happy again.
Yeah. It would be great to have like package JSON with commas and comments. But also it's like, well, if we do that, then you can't use, then like that package JSON file, you can't even publish that to NPM, as far as I'm aware. So we can't do that. But like, it would be very nice, especially for package JSON, honestly, because there's a lot of cases where like you want like to say, why is this here?
Absolutely. And we're all dying for that. A common refrain that I've read since the 1.0 launch, because there's been a lot of excitement and even to the point where there's like hype people who are just hyping stuff. And there's a lot of bun will kill node or bun has killed node. This is a common refrain. We had Matteo Colina and James Snell on the show just last week from the node team, of course. And they both stated that there's no beef whatsoever between the node team and your team at Bun. They say there's collaboration going on. In fact, there's conversation going on. Does that ring true from your perspective? Is this something where all like the beef between Bun and node is like completely...
There is no just, beef.
Yeah, there's no beef.
They're great. Like we Bun owes a lot to node and to node's community. Like we literally wouldn't exist if not for node. And a lot of the inspiration for Bun is from node. It's that like, I like a lot of things can be simpler and faster. And a lot of the inspiration came from my experience as a front-end engineer and also and doing some back-end stuff too, but mostly as a front-end engineer working with Node.js-based tools.
I appreciate you saying that. And I did read a tweet where you posted similar comments online, which is great to see from leadership on both of these teams. We just did a show about some of the TypeScript, JavaScript vitriol that was going on a couple of weeks back. We had Rich Harris on the show, and we were talking about how it'd be really nice if like open source leaders, people who have a lot of followers, people who they're listening to would come out and like say that kind of stuff, because there's a lot of what I call Molotov cocktail throwing amongst developers, which is unfortunate and unproductive. And seeing you say something like that, seeing the node team say that and, you know, putting it out there, I think is really important. Did you feel compelled to make a public statement because there was people saying this kind of stuff, or where did that sentiment come from?
I just saw people getting mad at, like, I'm mispronouncing his name, but yeah, he is online. And I was just like, this, people shouldn't be getting mad at this guy. He's doing great work.
He's the node contributor who has volunteered to work on performance stuff, right?
Yeah.
And so a lot of, I guess, the ire was directed in his way because of Bun's performance improvements. Is that fair to say?
Yeah.
Well, I appreciate you saying that. I agree with you 100% that he does not deserve such treatment. And in fact, I don't think nobody deserves such treatment for their volunteer coding efforts. Let's talk about the performance. I mean, we talked about Zig a little bit. We talked about JavaScript Core. I guess we didn't touch too much on that. But your benchmarks are insanely impressive. I mean, you blow other runtimes out of the water. Lots to like. I've been around long enough to know that that means you are making trade-offs that others either aren't willing to make or they can't make because either technical debt or backwards compatibility issues, architectural decisions that were made long ago, stuff like that. Like there's reasons. And there's also just, I guess, the direction of certain projects that matter more, priorities, right? Can you enumerate some of the trade-offs you've made with Bun, some of the stuff you're doing that has made it so fast, and how exactly you've accomplished these benchmarks?
The answer is kind of boring. It's like,
well, spice it up for me.
We just spend a a lot of time profiling, just a lot of time figuring out what is this actually doing? Why is it actually slow? How do we make it faster? How do we design it to be fast? And there's a few parts of that. One is that Bun uses a lot of SIMD, single instruction, multiple data. This is something that native languages support. These are special CPU instructions that like process more data at one time. So instead of reading a string character by character, you can read a string 8 characters at a time, 16 characters at a time. And if you can do that, then you can do things like you can like count numbers really quickly, or you can find if the string matches a certain other string really quickly. So like that's one of the tricks we use to make the JavaScript transpiler super, super fast, is that if you're reading a very long string, like for example, if you're parsing source maps, that source contents field is like, could be sometimes megabytes. And so you have this megabyte long string inside of a JSON file, and parsing that takes a bunch of time. So if you use SIMD, instead of reading it 1 byte at a time, you're reading 8 bytes, 16 bytes, 32 bytes at a time, then you go faster. That's one of the things. Another thing is that we spend a lot of time looking at what are the system calls Bun is using to do something, and can we reduce the number of system calls that are in use. So like, for example, if you want to copy a directory tree really efficiently on macOS, the fastest way to do it in a lot of cases is to use this special clone file system call. And that will do a zero copy, or sorry, a copy on write clone of the directory tree recursively in one system call. So instead of having to open each file, read the contents, write the contents in a loop, close each file, you can just skip all that. Of course, there's trade-offs with that. Like in that case, particular, this kind of a tangent, but you can like, you might need to do like an IO, it has like an IO rewrite lock, so you can only do one at a time. But like it's so much faster that that usually is still quite a bit of an improvement. Your question was, what are like the engineering, like what are the product trade-offs as a result of performance focus? And I would say, like one example right now is in bun tests, we haven't implemented isolation yet, like test isolation. This is a common feature that people use in like Jest or Vitest, where each individual file, or potentially it's not always individual file, it could be sometimes groups, but we'll start a new instance of a JavaScript global and have all the code reloaded for each one. That way you sort of start with a clean slate every time. We don't do that. There are things we can do to make it, to add it to bun and to make it fast, but we haven't done it yet.
So the trade-off there is your tests will run faster, but you may have some memory runover kind of stuff where your tests are failing at random times because they're not isolated. Is that what happens as like an end user perhaps? Or what would be the actual...
It would be... That potentially could happen, but it's like pretty unlikely. The more likely scenario is that like you have like some timer that's run in your test and then you didn't cancel the timer. And then you run the next test, and then that timer runs after that file has like runs from a totally different unrelated test. But you could also make the argument that it's like a resource, that like the test is leaking a resource and that it's like the test's problem. But I don't think that's a good developer experience. So I have mixed feelings suggesting that.
Yeah, that's kind of like the old Steve Jobs, you're holding it wrong, right? It's like, well, rewrite your tests to inject a timer or something. It's like, well, then you're not really a drop-in replacement if I have to rewrite my tests. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. And I think another option that we probably will do in the future is like, one of the nice things about actually controlling the runtime in addition to the test runner, like the test runner actually has a special integration with the runtime. It uses some custom event loop stuff for it to make it pick up on like unhandled promise rejections and things like that to make those test failures. It gives us a lot more control over things like this. So like we could do something where at the end of the test, any lingering timers are automatically canceled. And because it would work in a way that is not observable from JavaScript, it means that even if you do like really hacky stuff, like override function prototypes and stuff, it would still work. But this is something we haven't done yet.
Yeah. So another trade-off that Matteo mentioned on our last episode was with regard to bun install versus npm install and some security checks that npm does and that bun doesn't do, which just means it doesn't hit the network a bunch of times, if I'm understanding what he was saying. Is that accurate, first of all?
I didn't see specifically what he said.
Yeah.
But he's a really honest guy, so I assume what he's saying is accurate.
He wasn't picking you on you either. He was just like stating what he thought was a fact.
Yeah. No, he's great. What he's referring to, I'm guessing, is that we don't have an implementation of something like npm audit in bun, which sort of is the thing that's like, there are 42 security vulnerabilities in your dependencies or whatever. That's what it logs. We don't implement that right now. But on the other hand, like, so like, yes, that is a feature that is missing. But on the other hand, we also don't run post install by default for dependencies, which is like very good for security because this is a very common attack vector that normally if you want to like get a Bitcoin miner on somebody then you like compromise a package and then you like do a post install. That's usually the attack vector is like post install scripts or something.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And so we don't run that unless you add it to a list of trusted dependencies. So that's pretty good for security. It's also really good for performance because also a lot of the time the scripts that have post install are actually unnecessary. Like, they might just like print a message or something like that to your terminal and it's kind of spammy.
Right. Like, but how can I nag people to support my project after they install it if I don't have a post install script? You know, what am I going to do, Jared? I don't know if there's an answer. Figure out a different way. You know, they always will. They'll figure out some other way of getting that in there. So elbow grease, it sounds like, right? Like applied effort in specific areas that make it performant is the majority answer. Obviously, there's a few product trade-offs, things that you haven't implemented, maybe you won't implement by choice, npm audit as an example, that make it faster. So another criticism, I think maybe this was the blog post that you referred to. We had the video and the blog post. This one by another Jared Wilkert, Bun Hype, Have We Learned Nothing From Yarn? Did you read that one?
Yeah.
Okay, so on that one, let me just set the premise here. Roughly speaking, he's like, this smells a lot like Yarn, where Yarn came out versus npm. had a bunch of stuff NPM did, and performance being one of those things. And people got excited, started using Yarn. And then the NPM team was like, cool, we can do this stuff too. Competition breeds innovation. They put the elbow grease in, they catch up, and now it's like, well, what happened to Yarn? Still a user of Yarn, by the way, mostly by inertia, not for any other reason. But that was kind of the comparison. He was saying, he's like, this is probably going to happen with Bun, so let's not get excited and jump on the Bun train because Node's going to get better. I think Node will get better as a result of Bun, especially, like you said, if it's merely elbow grease. Maybe there's like specific things they can't do that you can do, but if not, like if they can apply these things and get faster, what do you do, or how do you combat, or how do you answer to a guy who says, this is Yarn 2.0, Bun's going to be irrelevant in a few years, let's all just stick with Node and let them improve their performance?
I thought the comparison was really confusing because like Bun is an all-in-one toolkit. We're a bundler, a transpiler, a package manager, and a runtime, and also a test runner. And like, we're definitely pushing all of the tools to get better, and that's really cool to see. But I think the longer term here of what's with Bun is that each individual piece makes the whole thing better, and that like they build on each other. The reason, a big part of what makes Bun test fast is that it is directly integrated into the runtime. The expect function is implemented in C++/Zig, really more Zig than C++. And like, this is hard for other projects to, this is a different approach. I think the Yarn comparison is also, I don't really understand it because Yarn was like kind of a side project at a large company, and Bun is, we're a very focused startup where like making Bun good is existential. At Facebook, it is definitely not existential.
I agree that it's the kind of comparison that when you squint, like there's a pattern there. You can do the analogy like this is to this, is that is to that. But then when you look at the details of the particular projects, it really does fall down, I think, pretty quickly. Let's talk about the company. So you raised money. I think $7 million was what I read. Is there more than that now, or is that the raise?
$7 million is correct.
Okay. And you have staff, you have a company. How many people are on the team?
We're seven people. Most of us are engineers. We're mostly focused on just fixing all those issues.
Awesome. And how much of that $7 million do you think is going to cost to get those issues fixed? Like, how far can you go on that amount of money?
At our current burn rate, we have several years of runway. But I would say that we're going to grow the team more. And so, but like, I'm pretty confident, like things are going great. The kind of the plan there is our next 6 to 12 months are going to be focused on just adoption of like, we want to get Bun to be used everywhere. And so that's our focus. And we have more than enough runway to do that. And then we're going to start to think more about commercialization, and the plan there basically is we're going to do, and this is the plan right now, the plan could change in the future. The plan there, though, is we're going to offer hosting built into the runtime with a bunch of services on top. It'll be a really easy way to deploy any JavaScript application from like single file scripts running a small server to like full stack applications.
Mm-hmm. Is this similar to Dino's playbook, what they're doing with Dino Deploy and those services?
Somewhat. I think a big difference for us is that because Bun is an all-in-one toolkit, we have like the bundler integrated in. I think the front-end parts will be a little bit more important for us.
I guess, what do you mean by that? Unpack that for me.
Like, in a few months, we'll probably do, we haven't started working on this yet, but in a few months, we're going to do a little bit more work on the bundler, like once we get through the issues, to make it a little bit better for building full-stack applications with like a runtime integration that like, it should be, like JavaScript is like, a big part of why people want to use JavaScript on the server is for front-end apps. And it's actually really hard to share code between front-end and back-end. And like, this is still difficult. It shouldn't be difficult. We're not going to do like a framework. Like, we're not going to do like a Next.js style framework. I think that's not a good idea. But we might do like, we're going to do like more tools for building those kinds of frameworks.
So Dino has Dino KV. This is their newest product. Have you heard about that? I can tell you about it a little bit if you're not aware of what Dino KV is.
I've seen it, but I haven't tried it.
Yeah, I haven't tried it either. I've just read about it, talked about it. So this is a key value store. It's built into Dino. It's like a top level global, like Dino.KV. And it's a really cool, you know, asynchronous way of having a key value store be built right into it with a SQLite backend locally. And if you deploy to your own server, it's a SQLite backend. But if you deploy to Dino, it's like their geographically distributed whatever database that's really nice, and you know, they'll take care of you in that way. And that, of course, will be a paid aspect of their hosting service. Is that the kind of thing that you would imagine with Bun, like in just as an example, or is that tangential to the kind of stuff that you're thinking through?
Maybe. I don't know. I think that specific example probably is unlikely for us to do. I think because most people are not going to use like a kind of bespoke key value store. Most people are using Postgres and like MySQL. If we were to offer, like, I would love for Bun to have a built-in MySQL and Postgres client. Honestly, I wanted to do that before the 1.0, but we just ran out of time because we have a built-in SQLite client. And so it's very natural to also just have other database adapters. And I think it's something that should be built in because pretty much everything needs a database.
Fair. So another guy we had on the show, I think you know Bradley Farias. In fact, he may have been instrumental in connecting us a while back. Like Bradley, he's from Socket Security currently. And he was on the show. We were talking about something else, but he actually laid out the case for Bun being a bigger problem for Dino than it is for Node. And I think that Node is like so successful, so established, so out there that I tend to agree with him. And so maybe Dino is particularly in your guys' targets, not like in a malicious way, but in terms of, do you feel like you're more direct competition with Dino as a Node alternative or not so much?
We're really more focused on, like, Node has the most users. And so we're really focused more on making Bun really good for the Node.js community. We're not really focused on Dino.
Fair enough. So we talked about the business behind it. That's called Oven. Great puns, by the way. You got Bun, you got Oven, good artwork. You're doing everything right with regards to just making an interesting project. You have a couple years of runway. Community, commercial, there's a push and pull there. Maybe you haven't quite hit it yet because you haven't decided to commercialize. But do you have plans? Have you had thoughts? Have you seen other people go through these struggles of the open core or the hosted? Or how do you actually take? Because you're permissively licensed MIT. You know, you don't have much licensing controls over the project. Have you thought about community versus commercial and just the strain there that will eventually be where you, how you decide on what to work on, where to focus, etc.? Is that something that you've thought about, or is that something that concerns you as you get going?
I think that the incentives must be aligned, that like the thing that's good for the community and good for the product needs to be also be the business. And that's the way to kind of make these things not problems. And Bun has to be permissively licensed. There's no other way. Like I wouldn't personally trust it, any like low level infrastructure tool that isn't open source. But sort of like, and this is why I think like services are a good approach. Like things which directly add value that are optional, but are easy.
This is a Changelog Newsbreak. Postman, Insomnia, and other API Explorer tools are rad, don't get me wrong. But as I told Postman founder Abhinav Asthana when we had him on the Changelog years ago, they lost me when the product started focusing on teams, cloud stuff, collaboration, etc. Bruno is cool because it's a lot like Postman and the others, but it stores your collections directly in a folder on your file system using a plain text markup language called Brew. Or maybe it's Bruh. I don't know. BRU. We might have to ask him. The team says, quote, "You can use Git or any version control of your choice to collaborate over your API collections. Bruno is offline only. There are no plans to add Cloud Sync to Bruno ever." Cool project. Open source, of course. Check it out if you're like me, love API Explorers, but don't need all those fancy cloud features. You just heard one of our five top stories from Monday's Changelog News. Subscribe to the podcast to get all of the week's top stories and pop your email address in at changelog.com/news to also receive our free companion email with even more developer news worth your attention. Once again, that's changelog.com/news. As you adopt tools, of course, you look for these kind of things. And when you adopt a tool like Bun, you may be asking yourself, okay, is it open source? So if Oven disappears, is Bun still going to be a thing I can use? And the clear answer there is yes, with MIT, right? But in terms of like the progress of the project, you have 7 engineers, you're probably going to raise more money, perhaps you'll have more success and you'll build. But in the rare case that Oven folds, maybe it's 5 years from now, maybe, who knows? Where would that leave Bun in terms of people working on it? Because you got so much, you know, effort going into it now. And one of the things we've seen with Node through the years is it's had kind of fits and starts. I mean, there was a time where Node was being so neglected that there was a fork called IOJS, and they're like, hey, we can do this better, and we need to not have it under the rule, so to speak, of a single company, which I think was Joyent back then, and have a foundation and do all these things, and that allowed a node to continue down the path. What does it look like for Bun in the case of Oven? Like, if I'm thinking of adopting it, how do I feel good about perhaps the people working on Bun, who I love and respect and really like their tool, you know, having to go make money in a different way?
Well, it's going to be directly, the services part of Bun will be directly integrated into the runtime. So it's not going to be, and it's good, but it's in like a very optional, very, it's going to be purely, it's just going to make it better. And like, the thing that's important is the incentives. And that's like, we're very incentivized to do this well and to do this right. I guess I'm a little, could you reframe your question?
Sure. So if I'm considering using Bun and I'm a long-term thinker, I of course look at the license, right? Because one of the things I want to know about my tools is, are they open source? If they aren't, then maybe I still choose to use them, but I'm going to have to think about that because I look then at the company behind it. And maybe that company is Microsoft. And I think, okay, the chances of Microsoft's support of this tool outlasting my business is high. You know, they've been around, they'll probably continue to be around. And so fine. If it's open source, I can have more freedom because even if the tool, the company that supports it disappears, the tool's open source, I can pick it up from there and run with it. But I also look at Oven and I think, well, all the work going into Bun, which making it better, 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 is Oven. I'm just assuming that now. Maybe there's a lot more people working on it, and hopefully there will be, especially if you have community success. And if Oven for some reason fails, God forbid, and I'm sure that you're doing great and everything like that, and I'm happy to hear it, what happens to my Bun? You know, does it just sit there, you know, half baked? No fun, sort of intended. Does it, you know, what happens to me? Do I have to pick up the reins? So just the
one of the things that's one of the great things about being open source is that we are growing our contributor base. We have a number of people who don't work at Oven contributing to Bun. And that number is growing. Like there's this one person, Hanasagi, who lives in China, who's just done so much great work for just like fixing random bugs. Like he fixed like a Node DNS issue with like the lookup service function the other day. And just people are contributing. It's really cool. The only thing I feel bad about is I need to be faster at reviewing PRs. I'm a little, RCI is like really not good right now. We need to fix that.
Well, your time is also precious. I mean, you got people like me, you know, banging on your door wanting to talk to you as your issue list continues to grow, you know, every time you don't look at it. So I'm sure you're torn in multiple directions because you're leading the company now as well. Are you like the CEO side? Or are you just on the CTO? Are you staying technical? Are you going to do it all?
Yeah, it's hard. I still need to write a lot of code and there's also a lot of other things I need to do. Mm-hmm. And I'm not good at managing my time, but I'll get better.
So setting aside the 1,700 issues, what are you most excited to work on? Like what's a thing that's missing that you just can't wait to go hack on?
Honestly, if we didn't have 1,700 issues, the thing I would build right now is, and other than like, and this was like, I almost did it like 2 nights ago, but I was like, I can't do this. It was like, I want to have like built-in like keychain / like touch ID and credential. Like you should be able to have like FIDO, FIDO keys and like U2F, all that credential stuff. All that should be just like built into the runtime as APIs that you can just use easily. It's silly that people are using like environment variables and like putting stuff in like plain text on their computers, particularly for like CLI tools, when there's like really good system APIs that are much more secure. And the reason people go with the insecure approach is just because the APIs are not there. You have to like install some dependency. The dependency is like unmaintained. It's like some nappy add-on that somebody built like 5 years ago and then forgot about. That was like a random thing.
What would it take to talk yourself into just doing some of the fun stuff, you know? Because that's what you—that's what got you here, wasn't it? You were doing the fun stuff.
I don't know. We have a lot of stuff we need to do. it's like on a weekend, I'll probably do something like that randomly.
What you need is a Jared Sumner replicator device. You know, if you could just duplicate yourself horizontally.
Well, we're hiring. Okay. We're hiring C and C++ and Zinc engineers.
Okay.
I spend a lot of time interviewing because we need to hire more people.
There you go, listener. Oven is hiring. Speaking of buns and ovens, we have a few listener questions. One of them is, where did the name Bun come from?
Yeah. So initially it was this friend who has a bunny named Bun. She was like, why don't you name your product Bun? And I was like, I'm not going to name it after your bunny. And then I thought about it more and I was like, well, Bun is a bundling of the JavaScript ecosystem. And Bun is also a bundler. So I was like, oh, that's actually kind of good. And it's also short, so it's like, and it's also like easy to type.
I agree on all accounts. Easy to remember, easy to type, three letters, not ambiguous spelling. It's a good name. And then I suppose oven was just a natural abstraction from there, right?
Yeah. And it's like, people are not sure if bun is a bunny, if it's a bread, if it's dumpling. So sort of, it's like a continues the ambiguity to some extent.
Right. Do you have any more puns up your sleeve? Are you anything you want to unveil?
Nothing right now.
Not right now. He doesn't have time. He doesn't have time to work on it. Here's a question from Daniel Buckmaster. What's the hardest part of Node to be compatible with?
Honestly, there's so many edge cases in like Node H. Like the hardest thing really is that there's a lot of libraries that use obscure internals. Basically, the hardest thing is that a lot of Node predates private class fields by many, many years. And so that means that a lot of the internals of Node are exposed. And Bun doesn't implement things the same way that Node does. So then we have to like hack in and like pretend and detect if we need to pretend to implement something and then start using the pretend version. So that way they can override it. So like an example is like require.extensions or like require. I think it's like underscore resolve file or resolve module or something like that has underscore resolve in it. It's like the private method version of require.resolve. And like, for example, like Next.js uses that to detect if you try to import React. And if you don't implement that, then it doesn't work. So even though we don't actually work this way, we have to implement all these like polyfills basically. That's really the hardest part, is that like this long tail of random internal that is, they probably shouldn't be using, but it exists in the wild. It is observable behavior. So we have to do it.
One of the things about adoption, I read this here in terms of adoption, Vercel added Bun support, Replit added support for deploying Bun, Ruby on Rails added it, Laravel Sail installs Bun by default.
Also Cloudflare Pages.
Cloudflare Pages. Probably new since I read that. So a lot of platforms, open source projects, right, frameworks are adopting Bun, and that's got to be super exciting for you guys.
It's so exciting.
Yeah, that's cool.
It's crazy how fast it's going.
What about apps? And I know it's like less than a month since you made it production ready, but like, are there people building cool stuff on Bun that either Bun unlocks them, allows them to build something they couldn't build before, or they just love Bun so much and it's making them super productive?
A decent amount of the latter. That like, there is also some cool stuff that are just like random things people, like the other day I saw somebody built like a, this like integration with like their Hue lights that like they put their hand, they're like a DJ. So like when they put their hand closer to the camera, it like dims the lights or makes the lights go up or brighter. That's like some facial or like some gesture recognition stuff. I think it's like that. And then people also just run, because we're Node.js compatible, people run Node.js things in Bun. But then the other things are like, people really like the SQLite integration, that you can just run things that are like using a database and SQLite analytics kind of stuff. A lot of people use Bun for Bun install because it's just stupidly faster. Like I've seen so many tweets of people who are like, I switched from NPM install or Yarn install or PNPM install and my install times went down by like 2 times or 3 times. Bun test is usually fast. Like for a lot of people, for like small projects, the slowest part in GitHub Actions for Bun for when you're using Bun is just the action to download Bun, like the setup Bun action, not their tests, not their install. Like usually we're faster than the GitHub Actions cache. So it actually makes more sense to not cache the Node modules in GitHub Actions than it does to cache them.
Oh my.
Because Bun install, it just installs faster.
That's going to take out a lot of the advantage of like upgrades on CI and stuff, is like the caching is what they get, right? When you get the better plans. But if you don't need it, if it's faster to not cache, I mean, that's quite a win.
Or it'll push the CIs to actually make their caching fast. There's no good reason why caching in a CI isn't faster.
I agree. All right, here's one last question. I think it's a good one to end on. It's a listener question. This is from K-Ball. He's actually a JS Party panelist. I think it's a good question to end on. What role do you envision Bun eventually playing in the JS ecosystem? So assuming success and it fulfills everything that you want it to, what role do you think it will play in JavaScript?
It's kind of like hard to say right now because it's pretty early, but we want to make it a lot easier for developers to build and ship and be productive using JavaScript. So probably a role that's somewhat of like a combination of like just the tools that we have. So like a package manager, a runtime, a test runner, kind of all in one. And I think what's interesting about that in general is that it means that we can solve problems at a different, we can choose the layer we want to solve problems at. So normally, a very concrete example of this is that, like, the pattern in CommonJS to, like, require, like, module resolution for CommonJS with a slash index.js and, like, implicit file extension and things like that, we support all of that. But if that was actually done from scratch without the backwards compatibility concerns in 2023 or really any time later than 2014 or so, that would have never been done that way. It's really an editor tooling problem. Like, this is something that editor autocomplete should have solved. So like, that's an example of, like, not a great layer, like, the wrong layer to solve a problem at. But at the time, like, the editors weren't capable to, or, like, editors weren't quite good enough for a lot of cases, at least for JavaScript, to do that kind of thing, like autocomplete imports. So I think by having such a large, like, a bunch of different places to solve problems at, it means we can make a lot of really good technical decisions when we're able to. Like, we have to, the first and foremost thing is we have to maintain compatibility. But if we can make decisions on new things, then we can do really cool stuff. Like, a very small example, it's not a huge thing, it's a small thing, is, like, if you have nodeenv equals production in bun, and you run a JSX file, and it's, like, default configuration, you haven't configured it to use a different JSX than, like, React, we actually have a faster JSX transform. It makes server-side rendering something like 20% faster. And that's just done automatically. You don't have to think about it. And that's, like, this would be a hard thing for, like, a runtime to do. If it was just a runtime, it would be a hard thing to do because this is a transpiler integration. But you only want the transpiler integration to happen at runtime when using bun in production. And so if it was a generic transpiler, you would need, like, a plugin, you would need, like, all that stuff. But, like, it's bun. We can just do that.
It's bun. We can just do that. I think that's a great note to end on. Well, Jared, I'm excited. You got me to install it, and I'm an old curmudgeon who rarely installs new things these days. So congrats on all the success so far. I'm sure you have a lot ahead of you. As you mentioned, you're hiring. So where do folks go to connect with you, Oven, if they want to try their hand at writing some Zig on your payroll? What's the best place to connect, especially if you're looking for jobs or looking to contribute?
Please go to bun.sh/careers.
There you have it. Of course, listener, all the links to all the things will be in your show notes. Jared, really appreciate your time today. And hey, I'll let you go triage those issues. I'm sure they're just killing you that you're not working on that right now. So I'll let you get back to it. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Now is the time to subscribe. If you haven't already, head to jsparty.fm for all the ways. Or just search for JS Party wherever you get your podcasts. And if you're a longtime listener, help us make our 300th episode extra special by leaving us a message at jsparty.fm/300. Everyone who makes it on the pod gets a free t-shirt. We are accepting text or audio messages, but here's a tip. Leave us some audio and you're way more likely to land a shirt. Once again, that's jsparty.fm/300. We'd love to hear from you. Thanks to our partners, Fastly.com, Fly.io, and TypeSense.org. And to our beat freak in residence, Breakmaster Cylinder. Can't wait for those albums to drop, BMC. It's going to be so cool. Coming soon to the pod, PartyKit, Effect.dev, React Jam, front-end architecture patterns at scale, the coolest new CSS features, WebGPU, and more. That's all for now, but come back and party with us again next week.